This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back to Wells Tech. This is episode 480 for Tuesday, January 17th, 2017. I'm Martin Spriggs, and you're joining a podcast that talks about technology and ministry each and every week, and helping me do that, as usual, Sally Draper. Sally, we're both in some odd locations today. Where in the world are you?
Well, of course, I'm in the Wells Technology South office. I'm way down here.
Deep South.
In the Deep South in Natchez, Mississippi, broadcasting from my mom's back bedroom. So taking a little bit of personal opportunity to be with my mom as we
family make plans time for her. It's necessary, right?
That's right.
Yep. So. And I'm at home, so I don't know if this is not Wells Tech. Well, this is Wells Tech North, I guess, from the
there you office. Go.
about 30 minutes north I live in Slinger, Wisconsin. So you see my living room behind me. And I'm babysitting a sick hot water heater. So actually, the guy came and cleaned him out, and I think he'll live to fight another day. So that was the good news. So, but I had to be home to meet him. So I'm doing this from home. And but the show must go on, and the content really doesn't care where we are. And that's the good news. In this virtual world, we can kind of be wherever we want, take our equipment with, and make do as we can. So, but we're very glad that our listeners decided to tune in one more time to episode 480 and counting, only 20 more episodes till that magic 500 number. So I think we're going to make it, Sally.
20 episodes to go. That's pretty exciting. Coming up towards the end of May, beginning of June. So countdown is on. Yep. And I'll just mention right away that my headset is in and out, so I may have to switch audio devices midstream, but we're going to give it our best shot. So, and we have something good to talk about today, as usual, on Wells Tech. And this is very timely with it being the beginning of the year. I think a lot of people kind of reestablish and review and improve different things about their lives with the turning of the calendar. And one of those that probably needs some attention on a pretty regular basis is your backup strategy. You know, just spending or having one episode where you lose a hard drive or your computer goes up in flames, whatever it may be, is going to make you realize how important it is to have a backup of your files.
It's all about the content, and the digital and the content that is valuable to us these days is almost all digital. As we create it, as with the pictures that we take, the documents that we create, the sermons we write, the lesson plans we write. They all are probably ones and zeros at this point, and fairly fragile. Back in the good old days when everything was on paper, you just kind of had to worry about fire or flood, and you kind of deal with that. I would almost say that our documents, our digital assets, are probably more fragile because things can happen. And not only that, they exist in more than one place. Sometimes pictures only exist, let's say, on our phone or on our tablet or on our computer or on a computer in another location. So they're kind of scattered all over the place, which makes it a little more challenging sometimes to, first of all, collect it all and then develop a strategy to back it all up. And that's really the topic for the show. So we thought when we were kind of doing a little bit of our planning, Sally, was maybe we would both tell our own little stories about the things that we hold dear and how we try and make sure that those things carry on into the future with us as well. You want to kind of walk us through what you do to kind of keep things safe and sound and backed up?
Sure, I'd be happy to share. It's not going to be that stellar, and I know that we visit this topic regularly, and I often feel like I take it to heart. So So you guys can...
Maybe 2017 is the year that...
That's right.
For Sally Draper, right. Yes.
Jimmy is your advocate up here. And so, but I do value very much the photos I take. That's probably number one on my list is, of content that I create is my photography. And in general, I have those backed up to Google Photos and also some of them going to Flickr. And so I make use of the fact that Google Photos will sync with any of my devices. So, for instance, we typically, on our family server, our media server, we sync that photo folder to Google Photos. So anything we add there automatically goes up to Google Photos. In a similar fashion, I have my phone synced, and any pictures I take on my phone automatically go up to Google Photos. And then probably... the one thing that I use most consistently is Instagram, and photos there go up to Flickr automatically because I make use of if this then that.
I was going to guess. Yep.
Over.
That's awesome. Yeah. Cool.
Mm-hmm. And then from the files perspective, I guess the most consistent thing I do is use Google Drive. So my most important files are definitely out in the cloud on Google Drive, and I'm depending on Google to have good backups of those. So I probably have a lot of it stored locally, but all of it has been moved out to Google Drive if it's something important. Mm-hmm. And again, you get the value of sharing. So it's not just files that I create, but that my husband and I collaborate on, or things like our tax returns and important documents like that that we both need access to. What about you, Martin?
Well, I was going to ask you first, any horror stories with your experiences with that setup, or success stories where your bacon was saved at some point?
I can't think of anything that I'm super upset about happening, any horror stories per se, but I can say that I think it's really nice that Google Photos ask me if I want to sync changes. So if I do make a change to an image, say I rotate it or I change the quality of it somehow or whatever in Google Photos, it copies those changes automatically back to the devices where that photo is located. So I think that's a real win-win because I don't want to end up with different versions
right.
of photos and things. And it also prompts me because sometimes maybe I don't want to copy it back. So it gives me that option each time I make an edit on a photo.
So let me comment on Google Photos because I kind of have a similar strategy. All the photos that I take go up into Google Photos somehow, whether they're with my DSLR, which I'll put in Lightroom and then export so I get the copy I want up there, or I've got the same setup on my iPhone where I've given permission for Google Photos to capture those and shoot them on up. What I've noticed, though, and maybe I'm doing this wrong, is it will not do that unless I actually open the Google Photos app. So it won't do that in the background. Has that been your experience? Maybe you've noticed that or not.
I think perhaps it has to do with whether you're on Wi-Fi or not. Mm-hmm. So you have an option in the settings of Google Photos to not sync over your cellular data
right.
plan.
Right.
So it could be.
But I know I've got that turned on, so I'm not sure whether okay. I'm missing another setting or I'm not allowing it to work in the background or whatever. But they immediately upload when I open the app, but it doesn't seem like they've uploaded kind of on by their, by themselves. But maybe I'll have to look into that.
Yeah.
But
I think mine do. So check your settings because I get surprised sometimes like, oh yeah, I forgot I took that whole batch of photos mm-hmm. and there they are in Google Photos. So
and I do pay for extra storage on Google to support the full image. So if I'm taking raw files or if I'm taking JPEG or both, they'll all go up there because you can, the free version of Google Photos will just upload a lower res or kind of a medium res. I mean, it's fine for most purposes, but if you pay for storage, then it'll upload, the originals, so to speak. So that's what I pay for each month, $1.99 or something like that. So maybe it has something to do with that. I'm not sure.
So just talking about all that upload, we said upload a whole lot in the last 5 minutes. That does become a very slow process if your internet isn't pretty snappy. And I'm speaking from experience because I'm down here in Mississippi and the internet wasn't real snappy. And I realized that there was a real lag of uploads. And so if you're depending on, you know, backing up to the cloud, you need to have enough internet capacity to support that, especially with large files, like you mentioned, raw files or whatever, any kind of, you know, document files or spreadsheets or PowerPoints or whatever it may be, can, you know, get pretty large. And so you need some internet capabilities to make that happen.
Yeah. And I would say I can't imagine a scenario, unless I am super concerned about getting those in the cloud right away, is not having that only on Wi-Fi settings set. Because if you're using your LTE or your Verizon or AT&T account to upload those files, that'll chew that up in an awful hurry. So, well, the settings. So my strategy, and one of the reasons that I wanted to kind of maybe revisit this backup discussion is because I kind of revisited that myself for, you know, my files and photos, especially from home at work. And I have two different scenarios, and you do too, probably. For our work stuff, we kind of use SharePoint and OneDrive, and that just kind of does it itself. So as we're creating files, we're creating them in the cloud. And, you know, occasionally we'll sync them down to work locally so that, you know, if the internet connection is a little flaky or whatever, we can have them locally. But by and large, I think we live in the cloud when we're talking about our work stuff. But our home stuff, that's where it gets a little trickier, because we don't use those same kind of scenarios. So I've got I've got files in a bunch of different locations. So I've got you know, a phone and a tablet and a computer. And for my personal stuff, I just use a MacBook and an iPad. That's where, and an iPhone. That's where all my stuff is. So the approach that I've taken is, and I've gone through a lot of different gyrations here to try and figure out what the best is. For a while there, I was just plugging in a massive thumb drive, you know, 256 gig thumb drive, and making sure that anything I cared about got on that. Until one day I kind of lost that and kind of freaked out and said, well, this is not good. This isn't, I wouldn't call this a great strategy. I ultimately found it the same day, but it was kind of a wake-up call saying, you know, this is a backup, but it's probably not the best and most foolproof strategy that I could have. So what I kind of wound up doing was, you know, doing a little bit of experimentation. And because I use a Mac, and one of the best tools I think that Apple has created on the Mac for kind of securing and, you know, safeguarding your files is Time Machine. So Time Machine is something you just turn on and you point it at some kind of storage device and it just saves everything. So I've got that turned on. And what I've done is, and this is a machine that I carry back and forth between work and home. So I have at work an external hard drive, a little Seagate USB drive that Time Machine points at. And when I'm at work, it backs up there. And I have now installed a Seagate, what they call personal cloud at home. It's a little hard drive that has some software built into it that allows you to connect to your network. So it appears as a network drive, and there's software, and Time Machine also works with that. So when I'm at home, I have another backup. It's the same content, so it's backed up at work and it's backed up at home. So that's kind of how I have safeguarded myself against, you know, natural disasters. So if fire or flood or theft happens at home, I will always have the latest backup from when I was last at work. So that's, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are in the same situation where they're carrying, you know, the same machine back and forth and using it at home or work. And that's a great scenario because you've got two different locations now, and you can kind of protect yourself against, you know, those natural disasters in one location or another. So that seems to be a strategy I'm very comfortable with at this point. And I don't have to do anything. So I don't have to remember. I don't have to put a reminder on my calendar. I don't have to press a button. All I have to do is be in a location, plug in. And in fact, at home, it's not even plugging in. It's just getting on the Wi-Fi, and then the Time Machine backup knows, hey, here's your network attached storage. And this output, we'll put a link in the show notes. This is the Seagate Personal Cloud, and it's, I think, 3 terabytes for about $150 it was. Very easy to set up. You can also serve media from it. So we've talked about Plex in the past, so you can run a little Plex server there and load up your home movies, etc. Those can be played there and elsewhere. You can back up mobile devices to it or retrieve files to mobile devices from it. So it's really a great solution, and I've had it in place for a couple months now, and it's really performing as advertised. So I've got that at home, and then when I go to work, I just plug in the external drive, and it backs up there. So I always have two full backups at going at one time. So that's kind of my solution.
I'm smiling because I can remember our days in Sleepy Eye, and I would almost say that the parsonage and the church office were in the same location,
right?
Because they were so close together. So having two locations, maybe you have to justify that, you know, they're in actual different locations. So,
exactly. One word we should say, and your strategy, I noticed, kind of does this too. Actually, another piece of my strategy is I can actually plug in another external hard drive to my Seagate Personal Cloud, and it'll back up to that. So I kind of have two backups. It does that once a month. So in case something happens to the personal cloud, I've got even another backup. But we should probably make a distinction when we're talking about backup, because there is a difference between backup and sync. So with Google Photos or Google Drive in particular, or even OneDrive, if you delete a file or a file gets corrupted in one place, it's probably going to be corrupted elsewhere. So this, you know, this strategy helps if you just kind of have a total loss. I mean, your hard drive dies or whatever, you're still going to have a duplicate copy or a sync copy someplace else. But if you do something bad or dumb with your files and you're hoping that, hey, you've got another file that still exists, that may not necessarily be the case if you have just a pure sync strategy. So whatever you're using, if you've got versioning, that kind of thing, which we do it at work with OneDrive, does versioning, which is really helpful. You can always go back to a previous version. Don't think that you're 100% protected if you're only doing a sync strategy versus kind of a backup strategy where you can go back in time and get a file that was at a different state or at a good known state maybe a week ago or a month ago.
So what I think I heard you say, Martin, that's really important in our backup strategy is that we shouldn't be dumb. Is that pretty much capture it?
Common sense should rule the day, yes.
Awesome.
Yeah, you can never have enough copies. They say one copy is as if it doesn't exist because technology will fail. Now with the prominence of you know, some of these ransomware kinds of things, you know, you could have your files taken from you and you have to pay to get them back. So that's another huge reason why you would want as many copies as possible that may not fall into the wrong hands.
Good stuff. Good things to talk about at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. One last thing maybe we should talk about before we leave the topic. We've talked about thumb drives and hard drives and network attack storage, and we'll put links to all that stuff, syncing, backup software. Cloud-based solutions I still am a big fan of, and we've talked about these in the past too. Things like Backblaze, Carbonite, Mozy, at a fairly low cost, and I'm still a big fan of Backblaze. For about $50, $60 a year, it basically is a little app you install, and it works in the background and does a true backup into the cloud. And then if you ever need to restore a file or two, that's easy enough. It'll zip it up, and you can download it, or they'll send you a thumb drive or a hard drive, and really all you're doing is paying for shipping because they will refund your money, whatever the hard drive costs, if you send it back to them. So these are great solutions. If you don't want to mess with this, I would say there is some inconvenience because it may take some time to get your files back and you don't have necessarily another local copy, but these are good solutions to look at as well. So we'll put a link to those in the show notes as well.
Excellent. All right. I think we have run through the backup ideas. I'm excited to shore up my plans, and maybe we'll have another backup session. We'll see how we're doing.
Awesome. Sally, you did an interview last week. Who'd you talk to?
I did. I had the opportunity to sit down with Mr. Tim Plath. I actually recruited my son to be a cameraman. So we had a crew, techies, and we recorded a short interview about area Lutheran high schools online. Tim is the chairman. He's the principal at Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School as well. Had some really neat things to tell us about the growth and opportunities there with this online movement for education through area Lutheran high schools. Joining me today on Wells Tech is Principal Tim Plath from Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School here in New Ulm, Minnesota. Tim also serves as the chairman of the Area Lutheran High Schools Online Program, and we're just happy to have you here with us today.
Well, thanks, Sally. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, it's really exciting to hear about the work of ALHSO, but first, let's just take a moment and get to know Tim a little bit. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about you?
I'm, as Sally said, I'm principal at Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School. I'm in my 12th year here, and have been involved with ALHS Online for quite a long time since its inception, and just appreciate the opportunity to serve in this way, too.
Awesome. Well, nice to have you. And we're kind of tag teaming off of your annual board meeting, I believe, you had here at Martin Luther College today. So interested in learning more about ALHS. So maybe start with a little bit of the backstory, how it all came to be.
Well, and it is kind of interesting, Sally, because today was our second time that we have met face to face with ALHS Online Board of Directors in probably about 6 or 7 years of working together, because we hold our meetings online just to further our mission and to help us out too from the standpoint of saving costs. ALHS Online really goes back to 2009, but it has its beginnings well before that, probably back in the 80s or even the 90s, and in various ways in which it was involved. And I really started getting involved in the late 90s, the early 2000s, and it was somewhere in the mid-2000s where I was asked by the ALHS principals to look into online learning and seeing what we could do, because we had tried it and gone into a little bit of online learning, but it hadn't been real successful. And so I contacted Jim Grunwald from here at MLC, and we started working together with a very small core of board members. And in 2009 is when we really started, offered a couple of classes in 2011, and just to a few students, maybe 20 students. And today we learned that we have 28 classes that we're offering, semester-long classes, and we're serving 492 students. And that's a mixture of ALHS students. The majority of them are Area Lutheran High School students, and then there are some that are Lutheran elementary schools, some middle school students, and then also some homeschool students and public school students too.
Excellent. Very good. Congratulations.
Thank
That's
you.
Great. What variety of courses do you offer?
We have courses like AP Environmental Science, AP Psychology. We do offer a Mandarin class in Chinese. I'm not quite sure how that all works with all the symbols and so on.
Wow.
But and Latin and German. What we try to do is our goal is to supplement the curriculum that our Area Lutheran High Schools offer, not to supplant it. We don't want to be competition for the Area Lutheran High Schools. We want to help them. And I think that's working because we have 21 Area Lutheran High Schools that are involved with us and partnering with us too.
Awesome. And I assume the teachers are coming directly from the Area Lutheran High Schools?
Actually, it's quite a variety. We have some that are coming from our Area Lutheran High Schools or our Lutheran Elementary Schools. We have some teachers that are currently inactive have been approved, and we work with the district president to make sure that all of that is acceptable. And then we also have used recently retired college professors or ALHS teachers, and so that gives them an opportunity to continue to teach, but do so at their own pace and just working with the students that they have.
What a blessing for the students to get the cream of the crop, the gems, great experience. Wow. So maybe take me through what a typical student experience would be if they enroll with the ALHSL.
They start off, if it's a full year class that they're taking, they start off in the fall with an online orientation session, basically to get them used to Moodle and the online application that we use to present the class. And then they follow, we have a calendar that's set up so that they start in August and go through December, and then it doesn't really matter when their actual physical school begins and starts. That's how we work it, and we have cooperation from the Area Lutheran High School principals and our contacts there. And then it picks up again in January and goes again until May. With almost all the schools, they have proctors at their own schools that help them to keep on pace, because online learning can be challenging because of the fact that they have to be self-motivated to get their work done. And honestly, some kids just aren't ready for it, but yet by the same token, some adults aren't ready for that challenge either.
That's very
true. And some of us learn in different ways, and we understand that, we appreciate that. And the students stay in regular contact with their teachers, and their proctors help out there too. So it's really kind of a joint cooperative effort.
Awesome. I'm having flashbacks to my first distance learning experience. In high school, I took history by correspondence. So I sat and I wrote all my lessons out, and I put them in envelopes and mailed them in. So come a long way,
it
huh?
Has, it has very
That's
much
exciting.
So.
And from 20 students to almost 500.
Right.
Did you guys talk about the future today? Do you have visions of where you're going and what
we,
to expect?
We did. Some of the things that we talked about were continuing to find high quality teachers, because we feel that we have something that's going on that's very good, and we have the support of our principals of our Area Lutheran High Schools, and so that's one thing that we want to focus on. We also want to we're looking at our the involvement that we have with our middle schools. We have 12 Lutheran elementary schools that are involved. Is that a direction that we want to go or not? Another area that we want to look at is the possibility of partnering or preparing and presenting a model to our Area Lutheran High Schools of a way in which we could have an Area Lutheran High School could set up a virtual high school for themselves. And there would be synchronous and asynchronous classes that would be offered and so on. And all of this is just kind of a dream and a goal that we want to start working on for the next couple of years. And is it going to happen? I don't know. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. We certainly, 7 years ago, didn't expect that we'd be looking at 500 kids in classes right now.
Sure,
either.
For sure. Wow, y'all are going to need a mascot and a cheerleading team before
well,
long, huh?
It's all,
a
and
band.
A virtual. Virtual.
Yeah, there
virtual.
You go.
It all
there
has to be
go.
Virtual. Yes.
Well, we would love to stay in touch with what's happening with ALHSL and Wells Tech and keep our listeners informed. So be sure to circle back with us as those plans mature.
We will
mature.
Do that. Thank you so much for
thanks
time.
For your time.
Yeah, all right.
Thank you, Sally, for doing that. Certainly, we would wish the Lord's richest blessings on that important work. I know that the service that they provide is so well received in a growing ministry that we want that to expand even more and to allow these students to get access to these courses. So.
Definitely. And I think we'll keep our ear to the happenings there, because it sounds like they have a lot of exciting things on the horizon.
Yep. Very nice. Sally, you found some news in tech you'd like to share.
I did. This is brand new. I believe it was just released today, January 17th. And it is an article and an attached PDF report from Nielsen, the survey people, and it's a look at social media. And I guess one thing that grabbed my attention was the heaviest social media user group isn't millennials. You would think it would be young people, age 18 to 34, but in fact, it's Generation X, which they're categorizing as ages 35 to 49, who spend the most time on social media, almost 7 hours per week, where millennials come in second, just over 6 hours per week. So that's just one of the many things you can learn from this social media report, cleverly titled Social Studies, A Look at the Social Landscape. And they have all kinds of breakdowns, who's using it, what operating systems and device types they're using, what their ages are, their gender, their culture, all those different things are broken down here. And then lots of cross breakdowns of the data as well. So I think it's a really interesting report for anyone who's strategizing about communication for your church or school. Perhaps it's good to know who your audience is, and this gives you a little bit more insight. So again, it's new from Nielsen. We'll have a link in the show notes to the article and the PDF document that they released today.
Yeah, this information is not just valuable for curiosity's sake, but as you mentioned, if you are trying to understand who your audience is and what channels they're listening on, you really need to be paying attention to things like this, because you could be putting a large investment into a particular strategy, and you're hitting the wrong audience, or the audience that you're hoping to hit is not tuned into that particular social media channel. It even varies by gender. It varies by age group. It varies by interest, and you can't be smart enough as you're kind of figuring out where to sink some of that time and energy when you're talking about church and school strategy, communication strategies. So good find.
Yeah, much less. Who doesn't enjoy some great statistics to play with? So lots of numbers there.
There's a lot there. Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff, though. What's going on in Wells, Sal, you want to share?
Just a couple of things we wanted to make mention of. One is that Martin Luther College has some great springtime courses available. They have early childhood offerings, teaching that works, even some educational technology from our friend Jason Schmidt. He's teaching tablet activities in preschool, as well as Google Apps for Education Administration. Two one-hour courses available this spring semester. And there's more. So you can head on over to the link in the show notes to learn more about these continuing education options from Martin Luther College. And then want to once again make mention of Interactive Faith. That's our online Bible study discussion time, kind of in a webinar format. You can gather a group of people or take them individually. They are live beginning Wednesday, February 1st through February 22nd, and they'll be broadcast twice each Wednesday at 6 and 8 p.m. Central Time. So again, a great opportunity to gather a group of people around God's Word and have some good discussion and also participate with others around the country, around the world. This time, Interactive Faith is going to be led by Pastor Randy Hunter. He is from the Madison, Wisconsin area, and he's also kind of the guru of Wells Marriage Retreats. There's a series of marriage retreats that take place all over the country, led by Pastor Hunter, and believe it or not, his study is going to be titled Mysterious Marriage, and it's Building Your Marriage on the Gospel of Jesus. So great thing to build your marriage on, and I'm sure it'll be a great interactive faith experience.
Very good. Yeah, I'm excited about that, and very practical this series will be, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Sally, it's that time in the show where you and I have a selection or pick of the week, something we found useful and would like to share with the class. Did you find something this week?
I did, and believe it or not, it's travel focused. My husband and I spent a good bit of time in the car over the weekend, traveled over 1,100 miles to drive down here to Mississippi, and I have a new friend who I took along for the ride. It's called Gas Buddy, and it's available at gasbuddy.com. So let me do a quick screen share. And what you're going to learn at Gas Buddy is the prices of gas in the area where you're located. So I've had it look up where I'm located, and I can see that gas ranges from $2.33 to $2.35 at different gas stations in this area. I can even look at it on a map and see which ones are closest to me. And this is pretty convenient and obviously could save you some money if you're filling up with gas. But what's nice about it especially is that they have a mobile app. And that mobile app will take your trips with you, and as you're driving down the highway, identify for you the best gas prices based on your current location. And so, you know, you may not know all the areas that you're driving in, and there may be certain areas where you can really save a good bit on your gas, and this mobile app will be able to do that. And it's interesting, it's kind of a crowdsourced experience. They want you to tell them what prices you're paying for your gas so that they can use that to build their database of information. And they reward you things that get you into different options on their website, like drawings for free gas and other things like that. So I think they're doing it very well. They've got great reviews. There's other things on their website, like you can look at map of the whole country and see average gas prices by state and gas prices over time, just all kinds of things about gas. You can even put in your trip, an upcoming trip, and your beginning and ending destinations, and it'll tell you how much gas you should budget, you know, how much money you should budget for gas for your upcoming trip. So everything you want to know about gas is over at GasBuddy.com. Have you heard of that one, Martin?
Yeah, something tells me we've talked about it on the show before, okay. But it could have been another tool as well. But that sounds super useful, especially as you're doing some significant traveling across, you know, state lines as well as you guys were doing. So, mm-hmm. Is gas cheaper down in Mississippi?
Unfortunately, not a whole lot cheaper. So we saw some cheap prices, and then here it's pretty comparable to what it was, what we left in Minnesota.
Okay. All right. Very good. My pick of the week is a tool, an iPad. It's actually on iPhone as well, and I think there's Android versions as well. It's a tool called Photoshop Fix. It is a mobile app that allows you to do photo retouching. So with the advent of bigger screens and iPad screens, for instance, it's far more reasonable to be able to retouch and, you know, increase the beauty of your photos right on screen rather than taking it back over to a computer and then using your computer to do it. You can do it right on the iPad or the iPhone. So I'm sharing my screen, the camera roll here, and pick a photo of my patio. And it's not a bad photo. It's a little dull, and I'm not going to go through the whole editing experience, but one of the neatest features in tools like this is the ability to remove unwanted items. And you probably can't see it real well if you're watching on the screen. Let me enlarge it, but there happens to be a garden hose running right through my backyard, ruining an otherwise nice picture of my back patio. What Photoshop does, and this is very easy to do on the desktop version too, but they've kind of brought that now to the iPad, which makes this super useful, is the ability to use something called a healing brush. So you bring in the photo, and it doesn't have to be taken on the iPad, but it could be from the iPhone or any other source. You bring it in, you touch the appropriate tool, in this case the healing brush, and you can change a number of things about the size of that brush. So you can take the size up or down, so you can make it small or large. Normally you want it a little bit bigger than the thing you're trying to remove, so I'll keep it right about there. You can set the feather, which is the intensity. It can have a very sharp edge or kind of a feathered edge, so in this case I'm going to give it a little bit more of a feathered edge. And then you just touch the screen. So I'm going to touch here on the right and just draw a line over what I want to remove, and presto, the hose is gone. Now, sometimes it works better than others. In this case, it was did a great job, and grass is, you know, something on the grass or over the grass is very easy to remove. Sometimes it's a little trickier, but if I want to remove more of it, you just kind of slide your finger. If you have a stylus, this would be even better, because then you can get more fine-grained control. What you notice is that I go over the, the different areas. It's doing a great job at just kind of removing that hose as if it were not even there. And so now I'm going to accept changes, and I can zoom back out, and I could do a little bit more retouching there. You can do adjustments to the crop. You can correct the horizon. So in this case, the photo was not, you know, exactly straight. You can do lightening and sharpening and painting and focusing and vignetting, all those things right within the app. And then you can save it to all kinds of different locations. You can save it back to the camera roll. You can send it to Photoshop if you have a Creative Cloud account. You can save it to Lightroom, which is the photo editing tool that I use. You can send it right to Instagram, Facebook, all kinds of other places. So makes it really easy to kind of work with your photos, give them a nice touch up before you commit them or send them out to friends and family or wherever it is that you're going to put the image. So it's a extremely flexible tool. It's got all kinds of features that are really easy to use and probably a more natural interface than trying to use your mouse, but using your finger or a stylus just seems to be a little bit more natural as you're trying to work with your photos. Cost for totally free. You can't sync it back and forth to different other apps like Photoshop unless you have a Creative Cloud account. And that's actually very reasonable. I think that's about $9 or $10 a month subscription for access to Creative Cloud, Photoshop, Lightroom, which are kind of the big hitters in this particular area. But even if you don't have a Creative Cloud account, you can download this. There are a couple of things in the suite Photoshop Fix. There's one Photoshop Mix, which will allow you to composite photos, and even Lightroom Mobile you can use. So lots of cool things coming out of Adobe. So if you're looking for something for quick touch-up or removing items like I just did, this might be something to try.
Excellent. I think your picture is just stunning. You sure can't tell that there was a garden hose in the spots you touched up. So that's really cool.
The wonders of technology there. So
yeah.
All right, Sally, let's move on to one of our featured segments of the show these days, and that's our ministry resources section.
And we are taking a new, fresh approach with ministry resources, actually diving a little deeper into whatever the resources are that we recommend. And this week, the resource I'm recommending is actually something created by our Wells Tech listeners. It's our Wells Tech Photo Challenge album over on Flickr. And what I've done is just highlight some of the important characteristics of it and how you can find things easily. And I guess the most important thing that I hope everyone knows, whether you're a regular listener to the show or brand new, is that we have, it says 1,087 photos, that the library is actually still growing list of photos, over 1,000 of them that are uploaded in high resolution that you can view and download, and they have no copyright on them whatsoever, so that you can use them in any way you desire. And I guess one of my biggest points is that everyone can benefit from free stock photography. Certainly these images were compiled with churches and schools in mind and the communication efforts that they have, be it their website, their social media post, their print or electronic newsletters. All those different things need imagery, and imagery is really predominant form of communication. And so having the challenge album out there gives you 1,000+ images that you can make use of. And many, many of them were taken to support the church year and the seasons of the year, things that would be great imagery for your ministry setting. So the key to finding them on are searching for them and searching more deeply into the Wells Tech Challenge album on Flickr is to use a search tag, Wells Tech Photo Challenge, all one word, no spaces in it, and then whatever additional terms. So if I were looking for images of winter, for instance, and I was back on the main album page, I could type Wells Tech Challenge album. And also, Wells Tech Photo Challenge is the tag, and also the term winter, and images from the Photo Challenge album will come up that fit that term winter. So I recorded a little video. You can find that in my post about this. And if you watch that in under 2 minutes, you'll have all the skills necessary to make use of this great image collection. So check it out.
Very nice. So it's such an impressive group of photos there. So pleased with the you contributed more than I did, but that we just had some super contributions. History resource is a and this is a collection geologic Lewis these are all housed in the digital library, so kind of that's probably the main resource here, because it includes a number of different things, but the resource, the digital library, contains things that have been created by students and professors at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. So there's all of the senior theses that have been written over the years. So those are mostly theological in nature, but students there also do scholarly work around historical topics, like maybe the split of Missouri and Wisconsin Synod, or church histories, or histories of individuals, or history of Wells World Missions, or et cetera, et cetera. So all kinds of theses there, essay files, even some audio files. Neat part about it is, and there's over, what did I say there, over how many files? I know I've got it here in my blog post. A lot of stuff. Over, is it 1,400 asset, 4,000 documents it was. So there's over 4,000 documents here, and one of the neat things about it is they're using a tool called DocuSpace, I want to say. It's down here at the bottom. DuraSpace, an open source tool that really seems to work well for this particular application. You can search the entire contents of a document, so not only just the title or the metadata, but the entire contents of them. They're all in PDF format, so they're easy to download and read in their original format. You can search by issue date, authors, titles, subjects. You can get a list of all of the subjects and kind of narrow things down that way, the date issued, and they even have a way to subscribe via RSS. If you want to be kept up to date when something new gets added to the library, you can do that as well. There are just some really great applications for this. I would say that anybody maybe leading a Bible study on a particular topic might want to search here for the topic that they're teaching on, whether that's infant baptism or the Antichrist or close communion or prayer fellowship, role of men and women, whatever. Maybe more practical theological topics like communion for Alzheimer's patients, or dealing with suicide, or ministering to those struggling with same-sex attraction, that kind of stuff. Or if you're just interested in some historical events or church histories, if you're doing research in any of those areas. So I think pastors, teachers, staff, ministers, anybody leading Bible studies or other kind of research projects, church historians might find this useful. This is all free. It's all available. We'll put a link in the show notes, but probably one of the great untapped resources out there. Another related resource is the Q&A, the Wells Topical Q&A, which is a little shorter form, which the Wells website takes questions from people who visit there, and then answers are provided. This is a little bit more structured, but probably no less valuable as well. So that's my ministry resource this week.
Great stuff. Personal endorsement. We have sons who've gone off to college, some to secular colleges and things, and my husband made a point of meeting with them weekly and reading together different reading materials and discussing, and they could just go to the seminary digital library and find materials there to read together and basically have Bible study around and learn together and encourage our sons who are off in this this new setting and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's just one way that you can make use of the seminary library.
Yep. Good stuff. I'm so glad they've made that available.
Mm-hmm.
Sally, what's the featured video this week?
We do. It's one that was shared with me recently, and it's something I hadn't seen before. So I thought our audience might enjoy it and maybe add it to your arsenal of teaching videos for a presentation or something. And the title of it is Michael Jr. Know Your Why. And I wasn't familiar with Michael Jr. Apparently he's a public speaker slash Christian slash kind of a comedian. And he recently was presenting, and he asked someone what his profession was, and the man replied that he was a choir director, I believe. And he asked him to sing Amazing Grace, and he sang it just beautiful, you know, supposedly, according to the video, on the spot, you know. But then Michael Jr. questioned him about, well, what if you were singing it as if you had just been released from jail after 30 years and blah, 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 and you really understood, you know, or whatever. And the man sang just out of this world. The people gave him a standing ovation. It was just unbelievable, his rendition of Amazing Grace. You have to watch the video to see it. But I think the point is our motivation is us performing the work ahead of us. And certainly we as Christians have the best motivation, the motivation of Christ's love. And so keeping that why of the equation in front of us is a good thing. So I think it's a good teaching video.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. That is going to about do it for the show this week. We will be back next week, and it's Community Feedback Week. That means that we're going to collect up, gather up all the comments, questions, emails, etc., that we've received over the course of the last month since our last Community Feedback show, and share them with everybody else and talk about different things that might be of interest. So if you want to get in on the fun, there's still time to do that. Go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, and leave a comment there. Send us an email, wellstech@wells.net, or find us on Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, Google+, Digo, all those places we frequent. And if you just pick one of your favorites and share a comment there, a question, suggestion, we'd love to include that on the show as well. So that'll be next week's episode 481. Sally, blessings on your time down there in beautiful Mississippi. I hesitate to ask what the temperature is.
It has a 7 in it. That's all I'm saying.
Ours might have a 7 in it too, but it may be the only number in it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's the life we lead. Thank you for joining, everybody. We will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.